This is The Record on KUOW. I'm Ross Reynolds. Why is spending more getting us less when it comes to health care? That's a question that Lauren Taylor tries to answer in a new book she co-wrote with Elizabeth Bradley. It's called The American Healthcare Paradox. Lauren Taylor studies public health and medical ethics at Harvard. She worked at Yale on building a model for public health innovation for the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation. And she joins us today from the studios at Harvard University in Cambridge, Massachusetts. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you, Ross. I'm so happy to be with you.
You begin your book with the true story of Joe that kind of personifies the point you're trying to make. Tell us about Joe and what happened to him.
So Joe is absolutely a real young man. He's 28 years old and living with type 1 diabetes. He's unemployed, therefore he has trouble accessing fresh foods, and he lives in what is essentially a boarded-up house surrounded by kind of a marshland that he has to traverse to go in. He's suffered with poor insulin control, as many diabetics do, and he's actually lost a few toes on one foot. He goes to his doctor and he tries to be as diligent as possible about keeping up with his diabetes control regime, but they have warned him that because of the wetness and the dampness of his shoes and his feet, he is likely looking at further amputations of toes and potentially even below the knee. These kinds of operations typically run at least $30,000. And so what's interesting about this story is I recognize, and Betsy recognizes, that this is an anecdote, right? It's not empirical evidence. But it does, as you say, cut right to the heart of where the United States places its spending priorities. We're willing to invest and invest and invest in medical care for this gentleman. And most of that is funded through a state medical assistance pool that is generated out of tax revenue. And yet we overlook that a $50 pair of shoes could really go a long way in improving this man's quality of life and health.
We'll return to Joe, but what we learn from Joe's story is that there is a lot of money being spent on him through our health care system. And how much of the money that we spend on health care here in the United States, how does that compare overall to what's spent in other countries?
Sure. So I think it's well known now that we spend exorbitantly on healthcare in this country. We're up above $8,000 per person per year, whereas the average industrialized country is able to spend less than $4,000 per year on health and actually attains many better outcomes in terms of maternal mortality, life expectancy, infant mortality, these really key things. So it's really astronomical spending in the health services sector.
You write that we do have some good things about our healthcare system, but not the most important measures of how a healthcare system works. Why is that?
Absolutely. So it's really important to recognize that there are real gains that we get from this heavy investment in healthcare infrastructure and healthcare technology. We do more knee replacements than anyone else in the world, hip replacements. We have more people living on kidney dialysis. It's not that the system doesn't do anything well. It's that what it doesn't do well are these kind of holistic measures of population health. You know, if you have something wrong with you and you have insurance and you have access to the system, you can get exceptional care. There's no denying that. But on a population basis, we don't do a very good job of keeping people healthy because there's not a lot of profit to be made in keeping people healthy.
You took a deeper look at how much money we spend on healthcare in the United States and compared it to other countries and found out, yeah, if you just look at healthcare, it's a lot more. But the revelation that you came to is that other countries spend a lot more on social things that help improve health care. Could you explain how that works?
So kind of the big add of the book, I think, to the just prolific literature out there on U.S. health care is that social service spending matters. And so often the traditional graph that you see and the traditional statistic you heard spoke about is what we just reviewed. The U.S. spends over $8,000 per person on healthcare, and the average OECD kind of gets away with, if you will, spending a lot less and seemingly getting better return on their investment. What we found was actually, social service spending complicates this picture. When you add social service spending in to kind of the analysis of all the industrialized countries, what you find is that the U.S. is no longer such a big spender. When you aggregate health and social, the U.S. comes in somewhere around the middle. And that starts to make more sense because our health outcomes are often somewhere around the middle. Now, what's really interesting is that if you look at the ratio of health to social service spending, the U.S. is really unique again. The U.S., for every dollar in healthcare spending, spends an additional 55 or 60 cents on social services. In the rest of the OECD, that ratio is about $1 in health service spending to $2 in social service spending. So you can see there's a really unique resource allocation going on in the U.S., and it's one that really favors healthcare over these kind of upstream kind of preventative measures, if you will, that go into social service spending.
And I want to underline that because that's a really crucial point, that here in the U.S. we spend a lot more just on health care than we spend on social service needs. But when you look at other countries that are having better outcomes, they spend twice as much on things like food and housing and transportation as they do on health care itself, and they're getting better results.
I mean, we rank 25th in maternal mortality out of the 34 industrialized countries that are commonly compared, 28th in low birth weight babies, 31st in infant mortality. It's not that we're doing just a little worse than kind of the global stars. We really, in many of these measures, are at the bottom.
Let's go back to Joe. Why does Joe live in that swamp?
Why does Joe live in that swamp? Well, Joe's kind of had a tough life. He's been down on his luck. You know, he's unemployed. He's had trouble finding employment as a result of kind of the recession. I think that he has been in and out of some substance abuse clinics and issues. So there's no doubt that there would be people who could find blame in his story and say it's Joe's fault that Joe is suffering in this way. But I think what we overlook in that story is that the $30,000 that is likely to be paid out for Joe's medical care over the next year or two is going to come from taxpayer pockets. You know, that's our money. So as much as we may have an instinct to dissociate from Joe and Joe's story, I think the reality of healthcare expenditure is that we have to find ways to intervene in this cycle and find more cost-effective solutions.
So we're not really talking about spending less money to keep people healthy. Maybe we're just going to spend less money on health, the health care part of it, and more on the social services to keep people from having to rely on the health care?
Well, that would be one way to do it, but I'm not sure that that's the most productive kind of strategy for the U.S. I think that there's such not only financial investment in the healthcare sector, but we've got so many jobs wrapped up in it. There's so much kind of physical capital that I think the idea of really taking away from health services to move it into social service spending may be not the most prudent path. I think what we can do is think really creatively about how to integrate the work of these two sectors. You know, how can we deliver health and social services side by side so that one team knows what the other is doing and we don't have this kind of chasm where people bounce back and forth and fall through the cracks. So I think integration is the goal rather than reallocation.
Lauren Taylor, your explanation of why we're getting low value for all the money we're spending on healthcare that you talk about in the American Healthcare Paradox is quite a bit different than most of the other explanations we hear. We hear that there's wasteful spending on unnecessary tests. We hear that it's inefficient government programs. We hear that it's racial disparity and economic inequality, which is partly what you're talking about. You find those explanations insufficient?
Yeah, I think that they're insufficient to explain the whole megilla of why we kind of fare so poorly in these international comparisons. That's not to say that they're not right. But I think what we tried to do in the book is shed light on an area that has really been neglected. You know, we've focused for so long on healthcare reform. You know, we've been in 40 years, really, of political attention paid to healthcare. And we've tried to intervene in a lot of the kind of areas that you mentioned before in terms of limiting the volume of care, changing from a fee-for-service system, even doing tort reform in certain states. And those haven't really lived up to the hype. You know, we haven't been able to really bend that cost curve that successfully, certainly not over the long term. So what we're proposing is maybe an additional strategy for tackling this high health and poor return paradox. And I think really it's one that we have to undertake if we want any of those other more healthcare-centric reforms to work.
Well, if we were going to spend twice as much on social services as we spend on healthcare in an effort to keep people healthier rather than half as much as we're doing now, where would that money be spent?
Yeah, I think it could be really profitably spent on things like housing, job training, nutrition assistance, even education. And I think that that makes a lot of sense because you hear so much talk that it's a small portion of the population who is costing such a large or bearing such a large part of the burden for health expenditures. And when you look at kind of the interrelatedness of the problems that the most vulnerable communities in the United States face, it's generally in and around those issues, you know, in and out of unstable housing, lack of education, often substance abuse and mental health challenges as well. That's very common. And so the goal, I think, would be to really get service providers teams together that run the gamut, that include not only a physician or a nurse, but also a clinical psychologist, a nutritionist, a case manager, someone who has some attention paid to housing, maybe legal assistance. And when we went out and we looked at kind of the best case scenarios in the United States, which are small and local, there's no doubt, but these are programs that are getting really nice outcomes. They are doing this. They're doing interdisciplinary teams, and they are throwing a whole host of services at people so that complex people with complex needs can be served by complex teams.
Lauren Taylor, one of the things you look at is food and saying that we should think more about that. I talked to a nutritionist not that long ago who said we should definitely be thinking more about food as a factor in health and said, in fact, there should be a lot more intervention. There should be, for example, bans on candy being sold at checkout counters. There should be sugar content added to food nutrition boxes. There should be a ban on supersized sodas. She recommended a strong affirmative action in that way to address some of the causes of poor health care down the line. What do you think about those ideas?
I think those ideas make a lot of sense in terms of public health prevention. You know, if you can limit the supply of high sugar sodas and even foods, that inevitably would have an effect, I think, on the obesity epidemic we're facing. But I think it's really important also to take seriously kind of American values and how they play into the crafting and implementation of health and social policy. And this is something that we pay a lot of attention to in the book. We use a great data source called the World Value Survey, which really shows that the American value profile is very different from many other countries. So whereas these kind of outright bans on what may be called toxic substances may work in some of the Scandinavian countries or work in Western Europe, there's definitely kind of a deep-seated suspicion of those kind of policies that we've seen play out in the United States time and again. So I think that that's a conversation that needs to be had in a more nuanced way. And I think we shouldn't necessarily jump to say, oh, anyone who wants to do that is a socialist. Well, let's really look at what the obesity epidemic is costing us now as taxpayers and be more patient in considering the ways that our pocketbook could be positively affected if we could really put a dent in some of the most costly chronic diseases that are affecting the population.
We're about 6 weeks into full implementation of the Affordable Care Act, so-called Obamacare. Does that do anything in your mind to address what you see as this kind of imbalance? Not enough spending on social issues that could improve health, too much spending on health care, ignoring the fact that spending in this other area might alleviate or reduce some of those health problems in the first place. Does the Affordable Care Act address that?
You know, I think the Affordable Care Act has a lot of merits and moves towards a place where we might be able to address and integrate social services more fully in the future. But by and large, it's still a lot about health care insurance market reform. That being said, I think, you know, there is a portion of the ACA that requires primary care providers to be paid more. And I think that's a great step. Primary care providers are generally people on the front lines who have some sense of the social circumstances of the patients and can be more attuned to what's the food supply look like in the house, what's the physical activity pattern. So while they're not social service providers, they're generally a part of the medical workforce who see both spheres. And I think something like that is really hopeful in the ACA.
Hey, Lauren, thank you so much for talking to us today. We really appreciate it.
Thank you so much.
Lauren Taylor co-wrote the book, The American Healthcare Paradox. You're listening to The Record on KUOW.